Welcome to Breakthrough Success. I'm your host, Mark Caberti, founder of the Content Marketing Plaza, bringing you 3 new episodes each week where I and top-level guests teach you how to take your business to the next level and achieve your breakthrough. And before we jump into today's episode, let me ask you a quick question. How much would your life change if you could make 6 figures from your content? Imagine being able to quit your 9-to-5 job, do what you love for a living, and spend more time with your family. That's what we help our students do at the Content Marketing Plaza, an 8-week program that will help you build your way to 6 figures via your content. You can learn more about the Plaza by heading over to contentmarketingplaza.com, which will be in the show notes. All right, let's jump right back into the episode. And one of the truths about taking your business and really moving it to wherever you want it to move, you're going to face adversity. And no big goal, no big accomplishment goes without adversity. So we need to learn, how do we deal with adversity? How do we actually thrive in it also? Because if we're able to thrive in adversity, it's easier for us to push forward on all the different things that we're doing. So the guest who's going to talk with us about this today, he is the author of The Crucible's Gift, 5 Lessons from Authentic Leaders Who Thrive in Adversity. The book is based on interviews from over 140 executives from Fortune 2 companies to entrepreneurs and everything in between. The book unpacks the journey a leader takes to become a more authentic leader, starting with their crucible moments they embrace throughout their journeys. Today's guest for episode 306 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast is none other than James Kelly. James, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks, Mark. That was an amazing intro there. Really appreciate and excited to be on your show and talk about breakthroughs.
James, I'm really happy to have you on Breakthrough Success. And I mean, adversity, we're all going to face it, but we have to have a battle plan for how we're going to go into it. So I really look forward to talking about that. Before we do, though, can you give us some background into a little bit about you and why you decided to write The Crucible's Gift?
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity to share. So I will use brevity as best as possible to share my story, but I received my PhD in Australia, and so I'm kind of this unique animal who has lived all over. I'm American by nature, but I, you know, have lived in a lot of places. And so the impetus through or how this book was written is predicated, one, on my interviews that I did on my old podcast, Executive After Hours, still up on iTunes and all that jazz if you want to check it out. But and two, in those interviews, it also, and the second part of this is really about my life and losing my dad at 19 and how the role of adversity kind of snowballed a lot of choices and bad choices at that, and failures and successes and so forth. And you know, if we go back to the interviews, you know, some of these CEOs and executives that I interviewed, you know, what I did on my podcast, which is a little bit different, though it's becoming more common nowadays, is I actually did a narrative. And I did a biography or bio interview where I would interview these executives from their childhood on up to current date time. And I actually never really cared about what they did, because I was way more interested in their personal story, because the nuggets of information and the choices they made, both in success and failure, to me was the most interesting and probably the deeper learning that you could get from any other traditional, you know, interview. There's a lot of great podcasts like this that talk about tactics and strategies, and I just kind of thought, what about the person? Because that's really who you work for, not their tactic or strategy.
And that is an interesting view. I mean, you get a background on the person and their entire thoughts. Like, that's why, I mean, there are a lot of books on strategy. There are also a lot of autobiographies out, which are also very interesting. Mm-hmm. And given the fact that you've been able to interview so many of these awesome people, CEOs, really successful individuals, what would you say were some of the key decisions they made that allowed them to batter off the adversities that they faced?
Yeah, so great question. I think what you found with the CEOs that, and you know, one of the major premises of the book is the idea of being authentic and how these leaders who really dealt with their adversity, they didn't let the adversity define them. They actually defined the adversity for themselves. And what I mean by this is really the difference of from being a victim to really being victorious, if you will, you know, having the victim mentality, why did it happen to me, to I'm going to take control of this and what can I do with this, or why did it happen for me? And so a lot of these CEOs, I mean, whether it was the chief strategy officer of Google, the chief human resource officer of Lincoln Financial, which are both, you know, Fortune 200 companies, these individuals had a lot of negative things happen, but it was the choices they made afterwards that really defined them and the way they treated other people, and most importantly, how they treated themselves and how they became a more authentic leader in the workplace and in their life, for that matter.
And it's interesting you mentioned that victor versus victim mentality, where if we feel like we can really own the adversity, where if we feel like we are in control, it's definitely a lot easier to get through that adversity. And that sense of control can really help us in any situation. But I'm wondering if you could share anything else that you believe we should know so that we can thrive in the face of adversity.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing about adversity is that each of us approach it, each of us process it, each of us react to it differently. So to say there's a one size fits all is kind of setting someone up for failure. What I would say is the way that you decide to frame it. And now, often you might have people come on your show in the past. I don't know, you have a rich history, 302 episodes. That's a lot of interviews you've done. You know, but if anyone tells you that, you know, just change the way you look about the adversity, that's BS to me. I think really the more authentic way to deal with it is embrace it, enjoy the suck of it, so to speak, the awfulness of it, be sad, be depressed. But the biggest thing that I realized when I was talking to these leaders and even with myself is that at some point you decide to not let it define you, and you start asking yourself, what can I do with this? Why did it happen for me? And that's the reframing. I don't ever want to tell someone in adversity, you just need to push it to the side and move forward, you know, keep going on, because then you're almost not grieving. The other side of this is the depth of the adversity. How severe is it? You know, do you have a hangnail and you're freaking out? I would tell you to hit pause button and get real. But if you have a bankruptcy, a death of a spouse or a father or sibling or something like that, then that's a different conversation. And so the, you know, one of the correlations that I found, I can't say it's causation, is the level or depth of the adversity had a direct impact on the inverse impact on the ability for someone to become more authentic. And so, you know, I know I'm not really answering your question, Mark, and I apologize, but it's really a difficult question because each person has a sense of resilience to their own. Each person has the ability to reframe the situation to their own. And so the bigger conversation is, if you aren't reframing it in a way that's beneficial for you at some point, maybe not initially, and for many leaders, it might have been 6 months, 6 years down the road before they reframed it. But if you're not willing to do it, then you're going to perpetually do the same thing again, make the same mistakes again, blame the same people again. And at some point, you're going to tap out your ability because no one's going to want to work with you, or you're not going to want to work with yourself.
And I mean, that is a very vicious
cycle. Did I depress you on that, by the way? Did I just depress you on that?
I mean, it's good for us to think that, I mean, you want to call it as it is. There is no magic pill. There is no one system. I mean, we like to think there is one system. There are many systems, and I could say a system right now and it works for you listening right now, but it may not work for someone else listening. So you could come up with a system, but it may work for some people, but not for everyone. So definitely a lot of truths in James' statement. I really like the focus on being authentic. I'm wondering if you could build up on that, give us a better idea of what that means for us,
yeah,
and how we can actually stay authentic even
authentic,
when things
sure.
get rough.
Yeah. So these are really interesting questions because I think that often people don't know if they are or not authentic. So I would say that I'm an authentic person. And the reason why I say that is I've been told that by a lot of people, but two, whether I'm in front of a CEO or a group of students or my wife and kids, I kind of am the same person. What I argue is that I have what's called the 15% rule. So having the ability to turn yourself up. So when we started this podcast, for example, Mark, you were really quiet before, and then your introduction, you were very loud and enthusiastic. That would be an example of you turning yourself up to not be any less authentic, but to be more in the context of where, of who you need to be in that moment. So that's the 15% plus. And then there's times where you need to turn yourself down and be less you. So for me, it's when I go to my in-laws' house. I'm less me. I'm less loud. I'm definitely less sarcastic at my in-laws' house because it's not appropriate in that context. But I'm still me. The bigger question you're asking is, how do you become more authentic? That's a journey. And who you are at 22, 25 isn't going to be, hopefully, who you are at 30, 35, 45, 65, and so forth. Because as human beings, and you know, in my book, I have this framework that I talk about in terms of what I found from authentic leaders. But the leaders that were the most authentic essentially had a growth mindset, a learning mindset. And that's when you start becoming more authentic, when you start learning about yourself, learning about your failures, learning about your friendships, learning about your family, learning about context and topics that you don't really care about, but you have interest in because they have no direct impact on your life. Learning about your trade at a deeper level. You know, all of these things from a learning perspective allow you to grow your self-awareness, especially when you start exploring yourself and exploring your friendships and your relationships and what they mean. And so this is this weird topic when we think about what is authenticity. Authenticity is about really you as an individual working to be a better version of yourself on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. Never easy, always ongoing, always pitfalls, always fallbacks, always hiccups. But no matter what, if your framework is I need to be a better person, inevitably then you have a growth or learning mindset, which means you're challenging the status quo, which means you're expanding your horizon, which means you're gaining experiences that can add to your bank of choices, if you will. And all of these things help lead you to be a more authentic individual or leader, if you will.
And it's interesting you mentioned that 15% rule where, I mean, it makes sense like with the podcast interview, like I'm very quiet going into an interview, nothing like when an episode's actually going. So that is a very interesting point. And I see that in my life. I'm sure a lot of people can relate where maybe they're slightly more upbeat, I mean, slightly more themselves or something like that, and then a little slightly less.
Just think of someone in sales, right? Like when you make that first introduction, you're either super vibrant and smiling and engaging physically in terms of your physical demeanor. You are probably way more aware of how you're using your voice and body in the sales, and you're listening probably 10 times more than you would normally if you're a good sales individual. So like even that as a daily basis, if you're in sales, you change your behavior to turn it up. It doesn't mean you're less of who you are. It means the context is asking you to be a better or different version of yourself. But you know, my background is consumer psychology. And so that's my PhD is consumer behavior, consumer psychology. And we have this concept called multiple selves. And this idea of multiple selves are different versions of you that come up in different contexts. They're all authentic versions of yourself, but they're just slightly different depending if you're in front of your parents or your siblings or work or on a podcast. And it's in those multiple selves that you have to be aware of how unauthentic or authentic you're being.
That is an interesting breakdown, and I mean, it is interesting to think about those different roles and our authentic selves in each of those roles, so definitely something very interesting to think about. And I mean, throughout the episode, we've given you a foundation for how you can build up to facing adversity, having that control, being authentic, but on the other side of that, there are people who they face different adversities, and the adversities break them. I mean, sure. It's very common, sadly, that adversities tend to do that kind of damage. So I'm wondering if you could share with us, what do you believe prevents most people from being able to thrive in that adversity, be able to see whatever it is they're doing to completion?
So let me give you an example, just a personal example for myself. My dad died when I was 20 years old. And I think I was the youngest in the family, and I was my dad's only biological son. So when you lose your father at 20, and that's, you know, as a parent, you know, I have four kids, you know, Hail Mary on my side. When you're a parent, you have sometimes different roles while they're growing up, but there's this transition period from when you stop trying to be their parent and start being able to be more of their friend, to have a different relationship. And my dad and I were starting to go through that. And so he passes away in a 6-month time period. And in that, I was broken. I was absolutely devastated. I was in college. I started drinking a lot more. The only thing that saved me from my grades dipping to like below 2.0 was a girlfriend I had that was really smart and drug me to the library quite often. If it wasn't for her, I don't know what the hell would have happened to me. But I was very lucky for that. But I was broken. Fast forward a few years later, and I get a DUI at my mom's house, getting out of my car with the police right behind me in a residential neighborhood that looks like Leave It to Beaver neighborhood. That was a continuation of my father's death. I think I was 24 years old, 4 years later. I was still broken. The pivot point was when I had to go into mandatory rehab, outpatient rehab, for 2 years. And it was in that point that I had some key critical human choices to make about myself and reflecting on the choices that I had made, the good, the bad, and what it meant for me. And the point I'm trying to say is that everybody has it inside them to take their adversity at some point when they are ready and pivot and find the good. So for me, it was looking at my father's death. Instead of saying, why did it happen to me? I started saying, how can I take this and live a different life? So let me give you an example. My dad was 5'10", about 250, 280 pounds, clearly overweight, did not do any type of working out, ate awful, never exercised on the weekend, high blood pressure, asthma, you name it. I made a conscious choice to say, I'm going to work out consistently, watch what you eat, and live a totally different lifestyle based on what happened with my dad. That's one example of saying, okay, I can actually make a different choice in this adversity. And in that, there's all sorts of other benefits that happen, right? So for many of us, when we are trying to figure out the adversity, it's okay to embrace the suck, right? And I love that that phrase because it really can suck. You know, so Mark, let me ask you, have you ever had any moments of adversity?
Definitely. Who hasn't?
Exactly. And at what point did you stop letting that define you and you started defining it for yourself? Was there a specific one you'd want to share? I'm just curious since we're on the topic.
I mean, I've had a bunch of different adversities that all kind of blend together. I always bring up the fact of me starting young, and if I made a single mistake, there'd be a lot more criticism around it because I was young and giving advice on like how to grow a business. And I wasn't even a teen before I started. So I'd say like I just focused on providing value and really being the best that I could. And that's what allowed me to get through that adversity.
Yeah, but when you describe it, you're kind of skirting around some of the things, right? So like it also made you feel bad, little, insignificant, probably whacked your confidence a little bit. But there was something deep inside you that kept saying, well, I trust myself. What can I take from this to be better? You know, where can I peel away the onion, if you will, of the criticism and find the nugget of what's important there and take that and move forward? That's I'm totally stabbing in the dark. That's a better probably picture of what happened.
Yeah, definitely. That's a better picture.
Okay. So when you do that, even when you are in the moment of the adversity, it allows you at some point to start pulling off the layers of that onion and start realizing that it's not about you, right? It's about the bigger picture. It's about the journey you're on. And that's when people who have adversity, it doesn't matter who you are. And then at the other side of this coin, there are some people, no matter what happens to them, how big or little, unfortunately, choose to be the victim. And there's, you know, not to be so pessimistic, I guess, but that is what it is. I'd never want anyone to be like that. I always want people to see the opportunity. You know, there's a guy I know, and I cannot say his last name. His name is Nick, and it has like 26 letters in his last name. But he just wrote a book called Victim to Victory. Victory? Victor? Anyhow. He has no legs, one arm with one finger, right? And the second arm stops at the elbow. And if anyone has a reason to complain and whine, this would be the guy, and he is the most happy person you've ever met. His disability is his strength. And so he goes on Instagram, does a funny post, and gets like 42,000 likes, right? He was just in China, and the kid's 22 years old, by the way, in China speaking to 10,000 people. So like, you know, the other way I think of adversity is there's somebody who always has it worse than you somewhere along the way. And when you start looking through other people's lenses that they're looking through, people who truly have it worse than you but have a different frame of reference or a different positive frame of reference, these individuals are your inspiration to say, you know what? I don't really have it that bad. It can always be worse. What can I learn from this to move on?
That's definitely an awesome way to think about it, because one of the big things with the adversities that we have is that we make them the size of the world in some cases, where you get hit. I mean, even if it's like this really small adversity, I mean, you mentioned bankrupt and death, which are like really big challenges, but I'm talking about like maybe you're not getting enough likes, you don't have enough followers. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are things that we could definitely fix. Those are things like you put in effort, they grow, or you work differently from what you're currently doing, but it's not the entire world. So, I mean, there are a lot of people who would really love to be in your position no matter how big you think your adversity is.
Totally, totally. And again, I think it's – when you are someone who I just think sometimes the premise is looking through the other person's lens or other people's lens, you know, what they see. And if you're able to flip that, it gives you insight into yourself. It's not easy, you know. It's not easy for me to get 1,000 likes on anything I do. It's a challenge, like tremendously so. But if I look through what people are doing and who are doing well and what they're doing and the tactics they're using, it allows me to say, okay, maybe they're more naturally gifted in that, so I can try some of their things. Or, you know what I mean? Like, I guess my bigger lesson I'm trying to say is when you start feeling like the adversity is weighing you down, you can embrace it first. You can sulk in it for a little bit, but then flip it and look at it through someone else's perspective. And here's the other thing often that we struggle with, because you have to be willing to be vulnerable. And that's a really big word, whether you're a solopreneur, entrepreneur, or a leader of a major organization, is be vulnerable. Be vulnerable to the feedback, be vulnerable that you're failing, be vulnerable to the whole process of adversity, because invulnerability actually breeds trust and compassion and integrity for those around you to also lift you up and then make you feel like, oh, maybe my adversity, there's positives in what's happening here as well.
And with any adversity, I mean, you can look for the positives, as James mentioned, and if you focus on the negatives, that's the way it's going to look, but there's definitely a lot of positives in the adversities we face if we are willing to look close enough. And I mean, we've hit on the foundation, we've hit on some mindsets to avoid. One thing I do want to cover is habits. So I'm wondering, James, if you could share with us some of the habits that you've developed that you would say are essential for your success.
Jeez. I think we have to define success first for me.
Okay.
So, you know, I think that some people will define success in financial, some will define it in title. For me, I try to stay clear of that because I'm setting expectations at that point. And then usually when you start setting expectations, boy, do you get disappointed sometimes. I define success for myself, honestly, and this isn't meant to be trite, is am I working towards being a better version of myself? You know, am I being a better husband, better father, better teammate, better leader, better podcaster, whatever it is? Am I embracing the ability to be better? So for me, success is, am I just getting better? And am I just being a good person? And, you know, I love the word you used earlier about adding value. Am I just adding value? That to me actually is really important. Whatever that value is, am I adding value? So based on that, for me in that definition, there are some basic habits that I do, some more often than others. One is I share gratitude with those around me. I tell them that I appreciate them. I respect them. I think that's really important. Two, the other habit is what I call relatableness, and it's in my book, but it's creating micro moments of meaning. And what I mean by that is that when I'm talking to somebody I work with in any context or environment, can I leave them in a better space? And the reason why that's important, and what I mean by space is like smiling, happy. Does their neuron fire in their brain that makes them recall this conversation as being positive? You know, and the reason why that's important from an organizational context or even from a social network context is that positivity breeds more positivity. So there's been research on this that says for every positive interaction in an organization or in a day that someone has, that person that they had the positive interaction with, the other person, is more likely then to move that forward and have themselves another positive interaction. And so I try to be the epicenter of positive interactions in my workplace. And my goal is always to make people smile at the end of the conversation. So that's the other big habit I have, because that actually makes me feel better too about myself. All right, I'm being a better person. I'm adding value to their life. I think that's really important. The third thing that I do from a habitual standpoint is that I am a huge believer in transparency and honesty. And I think the reason why for me that adds value is that people trust that I'm going to tell them the truth. I'm not going to tell them what they want to believe. And I don't do it in a brutal way or a mean way, but people know when they come to me, I'm going to tell them the truth, because that's my job in life, is to make sure that you have somebody in your life that you trust is being honest. Because in honesty, there breeds respect. And so I know these are kind of obscure, probably habits a little bit. It's not like, you know, put my toothpaste out on the sink to remember to brush my teeth. I do that also. But in the idea of defining success, for me, it's leaving value across different verticals, if you will, in my life.
James, thank you so much for sharing those great habits. I really like the one about, there are a lot of great ones there, obviously, but the one that really got me is making people smile, which, I mean, mm-hmm. you want to have that impact on other people. It's not necessarily a habit that people think about as often. People may think about some kind of writing habit or some kind of content creation or marketing habit, but it's interesting. You have one of the habits in there where the focus is on making others. Someone else better. And we do that through our content, but like the idea of like making someone smile is like a really unique kind of a habit.
Well, thank you for that. And I think, you know what, the reason why it's so important, and even though I alluded to it, is that one of the exercises I have people do that I work with is the obituary exercise or the funeral exercise, and they have to write their obit. And so when you think about how you want people to remember you, is it going to be that you're a good content marketer or you made a gazillion dollars? I don't know how important that is at the end of your lifespan. I mean, listen, I'm all for making money and having wealth, and all of that's really important to me. But what's most important to me is that I'm remembered as someone who made people smile and laugh, and I added value to them in a positive way. And I think that if you think about life from a legacy perspective, the habits that you should be forming is creating value in everyone's life beyond the monetary, because when you give them value in terms of making them feel valued, respecting them, that money will come back to you, because it will come back from a word of mouth perspective, recommendation perspective. It will come back. So that's kind of why I hold on to those habits of adding value to people's lives.
And I really like that obituary exercise, because it really does get us clear on what we want to accomplish in our lifetimes. You don't want to be on your deathbed when you figure out you should have done X, Y, and Z, or you shouldn't have done A, B, and C. So it's definitely great to do something like that before the time comes. And I know we've been talking about habits. One of the big habits for me is to learn as much as possible. That's why I love doing these interviews. That's why I read as many books as I can. And I know James wrote a book, which will be in the show notes, The Crucible's Gift. But I'm wondering if you could share with us three other books that you believe will have a positive impact on us.
So one that I read recently is called Conversations Worth Having, which is by Dr. Jackie Stavros and Dr. Sherry Torres. And it's the reason why it's amazing is that the power of the questions you ask impact the answers that you get. And so it's a really powerful book, very simple, lots of practice. The other book I just finished reading is called Play Bigger. And there's by four guys, but the one that I know personally is named Christopher Lockhead. And he also wrote Niche Down. It's really about becoming a category king. Fantastic book, really fun read, really deep. And the third book, I'm blanking out on the third book. I just read a habits book, but it wasn't Atomic Habits, which is on my reading list now. It was another habits book, The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg. And I read that one as well, which is a good book.
James, thank you for sharing with us those great book recommendations. Those will all be in the show notes, markerberry.com/E306. We will also throw in content marketing secrets in there for anyone looking to get more traffic and boost their revenue that they are currently making from their content brands. And before we wrap up this episode, James, I've asked you several questions throughout our time together, but what do you believe is one question that we need to be asking ourselves more often?
Yeah, geez, great. I think I kind of go back to the, I would say the overarching narrative of this is, am I adding value that makes someone else's life better? You know, where am I adding value? You put me on the spot with that. I should have known that because I've listened to a bunch of your podcasts, but I didn't think about it until now. Let me just go back to that one. am I adding value in those around me or for those around me? Am I adding value for those around me? Yeah, we'll go with that one.
James, thank you so much for sharing that great question with us and for sharing all of your great insights with us today. If you guys want to learn more about James, first off, get his book, The Crucible's Gift. Second off, he created a special page for us. So if you go over to Dr. James Kelly, KELLEY.com/breakthrough, there's a lot of goodies waiting over there for you. I know he's got a lot of awesome stuff, so definitely go to that link, which will be in the show notes. But James, I can't thank you enough for taking the time, coming on Breakthrough Success, and sharing all of your great insights with us. So thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, and Mark, just one more quick thing. I have in the next, I don't know when this is coming out, but in the next, this is end of December, 4 or 5 weeks, I've actually had an audiobook coming out for this as well. Ooh. But the audiobook is it will be killer because I have professional actors in the book. There are different aspects, different conversations that come from my old podcast in the book. And I have actual actors playing those roles in the book. And so it's a really dynamic read of three different actors, women, a woman, and two different men acting, essentially reading the book. So it's a really dynamic output, and I'm really excited about it.
Where can we? I mean, I know that'll be on Amazon.
Correct.
Would Kindle. Would that also be on the drjameskelly.com/breakthrough?
I don't know where else that's going to. I haven't got that far yet with it. I just know they're producing it. Yes, maybe. Yes, we'll say yes for now. There'll be a links to it. And then it will be on Audible as well and all those other venues.
Well, either way, I'm sure it's going to be a great book. We will try to include that in the show notes.
I didn't help you at all on that one. You set me up and I totally swatted. I just missed that one.
I mean, you shared your audiobook and listeners really like audiobooks.
Yeah. Thank you, Mark, so much for having me on Breakthrough Success. I great. Appreciate it.
Want to dominate the podcasting industry? Now you can with your free copy of my book, Podcast Domination. You'll learn how to launch, grow, and monetize your very own show. And whether you are a beginner or an expert, this book has a lot of golden nuggets for you. We'll cover the cost of producing this book. All we ask is that you cover the shipping. To get your copy, head over to markgaberty.com/PD.